from Hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 16, recorded Monday, May 1st, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by PeterBloom.com. Start with better controls, finish with better sights. Online at PeterBloom.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott uncovers some new web tools, text-based utilities, source code, and other Hansel minutiae.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes. Show number 15, Hansel Minutiae number 1. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Carl. How are you?
So rather than having a theme, we're sort of scatterbrained today, right?
Well, I wouldn't say scatterbrained. I would say that I'm defragmenting the Hansel Minutes. I'm trying to get all the different little things that didn't fit into a large thematic show, the Hansel Minutiae, all together. I'm really getting tired of all the Hansel puns that are being sent to me.
Yeah, okay. So basically, you got to defrag the hard drive from once in a while. So this is defragging number 1.
In fact, it is.
Web tools. Got some web tools for us today.
Yeah, a couple of cool things that came across the email today. One of them was a thing called clip.net, except you spell clip with a 1. You go CL1P.net, or for the shrinkster people out there, shrinkster.com/EIV. With all the Ray Ozzie stuff going around with his live internet clipboard and micro formats and stuff, Web 2.0 came up with their own solution called clip.net, the internet clipboard. And basically, it's a fairly manual and hacky but incredibly clever way to copy-paste between computers. So if you go to shrinkster.com/EIW, which is actually an alias for clip.net/Hansel Minutes, you'll see some text that I pasted there earlier. So if you've ever got to go around firewalls or you want to paste a whole lot of text to someone, you can just go up there. It's like you could go up there right now, Carl, to go to cl1p.net/ and then put in whatever you want, like /Carl Franklin. And if that doesn't already exist as a clipboard, you'll get a big text box. You can paste a whole bunch of stuff there and then send someone that link and they'll be able to pick it up. Or you can upload files up to 2 megs.
Wow, I like it.
In size. Yeah. So as long as you're not putting private information up there and private files, you can move files of up to 2 megs and big chunks of clipboard information. Pretty clever. They've got about 30,000 clips up there. Very cool stuff.
Very cool.
So in the interest of sharing, I'm on the Delicious bandwagon. I don't know if I've got you hooked on Delicious yet.
I am hooked.
You are on Delicious, isn't
Delicious
it?
Delicious is very cool.
It's fantastic. So this is del.icio.us. It's basically delicious with dots strategically placed within the word.
The delicious dots.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you can go to my delicious list at shrinkster.com/EIX. And the thing that is people look at delicious and they go, I don't quite get it. I don't quite understand what delicious is all about. But you've just got to give it a day of your time. And instead of putting things in your bookmarks or trying to save URLs in a text field, try Delicious. It's a social bookmarker. The thing that's interesting about Delicious, from my point of view, isn't that you can store all of your information up there. It's that you can see information that other people have tagged.
Right.
So I can go and say Delicious/S Hanselman, because S Hanselman's my username, and then the name of one of my tags. So Delicious/S Hanselman/MSH. And I can see all of the things that I have tagged with MSH. MSH is the Microsoft shell. We'll talk about it a little later. It's now changed its name. But what's cool is that I could say, well, what are other people tagging with MSH? What are other people? What are popular things that are tagged with MSH? And then I can copy them into my list. So it's the power of bookmarking along with the power of the entire web also bookmarking.
And ranking, right?
Yeah, and these tag clouds build, exactly like you're saying, the ranking. If it seems that a particular page is better tagged with something else other than MSH, maybe it should be tagged with Monad or PowerShell or whatever, the mob mentality of bookmarkers will eventually pick the right tag.
So what you mentioned PowerShell. What is PowerShell?
Well, PowerShell is the new name, and isn't a lovely name it is, for Monad that we did a show on a couple of weeks ago.
Aha.
PowerShell is the marketing version of the really awesome and kind of like clever Monad mysterious name.
Nice.
I actually blogged a eulogy at shrinkster.com/EIY about mourning Moned. And PowerShell, though it is, they've changed everything. The thing that's kind of interesting, they've changed the extension from .msh files to .ps1, which means that the next version of PowerShell will have a PS2 extension.
Oh, no.
Which will make the PlayStation users very happy, I'm sure. Huh. But one of the things with the name change, Bruce Payette, a brilliant lead engineer on the PowerShell project, has come out with a free chapter of his PowerShell in Action upcoming book. You can go to shrinkster.com/EIZ, and you can get a copy of that first unedited chapter. This is going to be an insider's view on the PowerShell with all the updated information. You can get the link directly to the PDF at shrinkster.com/EJ0. And that's the unedited draft source for his chapter one. And I read it yesterday, and I must say I really like the style. And if you are wondering what Monad is, what PowerShell is, this is a really quick read, very flowing language with a lot of cool examples. Definitely a chapter to check out if you want to get excited about being more effective from the command line.
We had a lot of great emails, a lot of great feedback by email about the Monad show. And so much so that we chose that as our first installment in .NET Developers Journal. We're doing a sort of a synopsis of one of the shows that we've done recently. And just a transcript of a part of that show. And we chose the Monad show for the first one.
Good show. That was a lot of fun. A lot of people thought it'd be weird to talk about a command line over the radio, but I think we pulled it off.
Yep.
I can almost talk in monospaced font right now, but not quite. So speaking actually of text mode and things of that ilk, spending time at the command line, I blogged recently about what I call the return of Norton Commander.
Dun, dun, dun.
Turns out, you know, and I had forgotten about this, because I used to use this tool called FAR a while back. It's a Russian tool. But, you know, Norton Commander, right, that was the bomb. That was the big blue two-paned DOS application.
That was the shell of the preferred shell for DOS.
That's where I spent all my time at Norton Commander, because the thing that was cool about it is that you could fold up the panes and still do your DOS commands in the background. So you could do DOS without ever leaving Norton Commander.
Right.
It was wicked fast. It was basically Windows Explorer for DOS, but it didn't suck. And
oh, man, that's cold.
But some people have called Norton Commander the greatest application ever written, and there's actually a series of fan sites, including the Commander homepage.
Yeah.
There's a couple of applications out there, one of which called FAR that I'm getting back into that Misha Bergal emailed me about. And all those links are at shrinkster.com/EJ1.
Okay.
FAR is a text mode Norton Commander clone with full Windows long file name support. So you can be poking around and, you know, full speed using TrueType fonts. I changed my font to Lucida Console for big screen text mode.
Now, this is FAR, F-A-R. Does that stand for something?
I don't know. I don't think it does.
It's FAR, right?
It's the FAR manager. Yeah.
Okay.
And what's cool about it, though, is that not only do you get full support for long file names, but there's a whole rich plugin community such that it's really impossible to look at FAR without its plugins. So you can step into archives as if they're directories. Hmm. It's pretty amazing. And turns out I'm getting a whole lot of comments on that post. I've got 14 at the time of this recording, and
wow,
people
cool.
are talking about there are other applications out there. I thought there'd be like one DOS application that would
yeah.
be filling this niche, but there's an application called Total Commander, Directory Opus, Servant Salamander, ZTree Win, XTree Gold clones. These are all applications vying for that valuable space as number one DOS-based text mode file manager. I had no idea. I knew about FAR, but did not realize there was such a fervent group of fanboys out there. And I'm going to have to go through step by step and learn about all these other ones that I hadn't heard of and maybe do a review sometime.
Well, why do you think that there's this return to text mode utilities like this?
Well, text mode is fast. It's guaranteed. It's. I actually did an article on my blog a while back. I'll put a Shrinkster up. This was in 2004. I've got that up at shrinkster.com/EJV. That's shrinkster.com/EJV. And I had blogged about a post I'd called Opportunity Windows is Missing the Text Mode Boat. Because, you know, I was over at Toyota Service getting my car worked on, and everyone was working on text mode. You know, you go to JCPenney's and you buy something at a department store. They're all typing in a text mode. When you go somewhere and you notice that they have to reach for the mouse in order to, you know, click and open up the cash register, don't you kind of go, gosh, isn't there a hotkey to open the register?
Yeah, or a button on the screen.
Yeah, there's a real, or a touch screen. So
right.
I don't think a mouse and a keyboard are really a point of sale kind of a thing.
Definitely not.
But, you know, I know I hate putting my hands on the mouse when I'm writing code, but I always have to reach for it when I want to start dragging things around in Explorer.
Right.
And there's just something comforting about text mode. It's fast, it's clean, it's crisp. There's nothing in the way.
Especially data entry, right?
Yeah, totally.
This is one of the biggest problems of, you know, working in a asynchronous environment like Windows is Windows will just pop up on you. Like you're typing, you're entering some data, and all of a sudden, boing, something comes up, IM comes up or something, and you type the last half of your sentence to a friend of yours or something.
And they steal your focus.
And you can prevent that with the Tweak UI tools that we talked about last week. There's a setting in there to prevent other windows from stealing your focus, but still, you know, it's not the default behavior.
Yeah, and I understand when I talked to some of the guys on the Aero team at Windows Vista that they are doing things to be a little more formal about what windows are allowed to steal focus away from you and what aren't.
Yeah.
There's a couple of interesting posts, I think, at Raymond Chen's site about why exactly that happens in, you know, the internals of Windows, why some windows are allowed to pull full focus away and some aren't.
Cool.
So a couple of other cool applications that I've been checking out. One's actually an older application called Denim. And this is an informal tool that you would use to prototype an application or typically a website. This has been out for a while, but it's over at the University of Washington. And this is getting more and more advanced. They've got version 2.0 out. It's a Java-based application that runs on Windows and Unix and Mac. And this is cool. You actually draw your prototypes just like using a pen, like you're drawing on a tablet PC. Just sketching out kind of how you want things to look, and then you might say, well, this button is going to go over to that page. Then you would draw that other page and then just draw a line between the button and the page, and you're basically building a hypertext demo.
Wow.
But what's cool is then you hit export to HTML, and then they use your actual rough sketches and export your entire demo.
How's the HTML? That's the question.
Well, basically what it is it's just an image of what you drew with a bunch of image maps. So the idea is that you're going to be giving them a live, you know, it's like drawing on paper, except you get the hypertext feel.
I get it.
So you can do quick prototyping of functional aspects of a site.
And it is prototyping. It's not website building.
No, exactly. It is a quick prototyper. And this has been around for a very long time, and it's a sketcher, and they've got videos and different examples of this up at shrinkster.com/EJB. And I've been a fan of this for a number of years. I've used it a couple of times on projects. And then I noticed that there is a unrelated but way more advanced commercial prototyper called Easy Prototype at shrinkster.com/EJC. And this one actually lets you take existing images and import them. So you could be basically building your website on a whiteboard, take a picture of your whiteboard, import them into the tool, and then mark the different hotspots, and then build your prototype from existing pencil sketches, existing digital photos.
Wow.
Make them all interactive, and then publish them as HTML, and then show them to the client and say, so kind of like this?
Yeah.
The speed that you could do this kind of prototyping versus writing the application yourself would be significant.
Yeah, I bet.
So you can get that feedback loop started, you know, way earlier. This is about making the pages interactive, not making them pretty.
Sounds great. All right, let's talk about some source code. You found some good source code repositories this week?
Well, I noticed that, you know, we had talked about Sean McCormack last week, and I ended up meeting him in person for the second time at deeperin.net in Wisconsin, and then come home here, log in Monday morning, and then I see that he's released the underlying framework for his two applications, CODIS and Zanebug. They're up source that he's released out to the world at shrinkster.com/EJ3. This is an enterprise library that he has released that includes object caching, business rule validation, a really cool XPath navigator that you can basically navigate over objects using XPath. Huh. Even though they're not XML, they just, you have an object graph, you can walk around inside it.
Wow.
He's got some pretty interesting code generation stuff and just a bunch of really useful classes that are utility based. I like the Microsoft Enterprise Library, but it was really cool to see a smart developer basically take all of the chunks of source that he uses to make his life easier. And rather than making it snippets, he's made it a formal library and then gone on and created two really successful open source applications using that underlying library.
Wow, that's great.
You know, you really become a better coder reading other people's code.
Yeah.
You know, you don't become a better coder writing. You know, if you're in an English literature class, they don't say, you really should write more, you'll become a better writer.
Yeah, although there is truth to that, but
there
you
is.
Have to read a lot more than you write.
Totally. So I was really happy to see that out there, and he's doing a great thing to make it available. I'm looking forward to reading that code over the coming weeks.
Are you doing a webcast coming up here soon about hardware or something?
Yeah, actually, speaking of source code, I've got all the different source and things that I've written for the Coding for Fun site at msdn.com/codingforfun.
Yeah.
I'm going to be doing a webcast talking about programming hardware with .NET 2.0. That's up at shrinkster.com/EIT.
Now, what do you mean hardware?
So this is basically anything that's a physical object separate from your computer. So that might, well, actually on the webcast, I'll be talking to a GPS with serial ports.
Okay.
I'll be talking about those key fobs, the security key fobs that are USB based, and
right.
Talk about the hell that is USB.
Yes.
We'll talk about talking to that webcam, the baby webcam, using HTTP.
All right.
You know, it's really great if an object that you're trying to interface with has an IP address. That's the ultimate for hardware.
Yep.
I can just talk to it, and it's got its own web server. But not every piece of hardware is like that. So we're going to talk about all those things.
Going to use sockets for any of this?
Probably not raw sockets, but I will be manually parsing HTTP and looking at JPEG files that are coming across in what's called MJPEG or Motion JPEG.
Cool.
And that won't be sockets, but it'll be pretty low level.
Pretty close, yeah.
Yeah. A couple other things that are going on right now is David Yak's MVP Hacks book is coming out in time for TechEd.
Yeah.
You can get details on that at shrinkster.com/EJ4. And this is going to be a little bit different kind of a book. It's not like the ASP.NET 2.0 professional book. This is just a book of collected hacks, undocumented things, tips, tricks, things that will allow you to mess around with ASP. And it'll actually be most of the hacks work on ASP.NET 1.1 and 2.0. And I did the HTTP handler section, the view state section, some stuff on HTTP modules, pulled in content from all over, Phil Hack's blog, a number of different places. One of the neat things is a little HTTP handler based on an Edward Tufte thing called Sparklines. Sparklines, you can learn about those at shrinkster.com/EJ5, are little tiny graphics that are like the size of words that are meant to provide a burst of information and used almost like a noun. So someone would say, your blood sugar is, and then you'd see a graphic appear as if it were a word, and it would be a tiny little line graph. And by just looking at that line graph, you could tell a picture is worth 1,000 words.
Right.
So this HTTP handler written by Eric Bachtal is at shrinkster.com/EJ6 is a totally kind of extensible C# HTTP handler that can be used in any application. It doesn't care about what kind of application you're using because the interface is query string based. You actually describe the graph over the query string using whatever numbers you want, and he'll automatically return a generated graphic. He can do bar charts. He can do smooth. It's all based on the query string. He can do smooth lines. And then we've put that into the book with his permission and using that Tufte-esque way of thinking, you could take that and provide, ongoing balances information on a financial site, blood sugar information, visitors on your site. I mean, the benefits of having a tiny, tiny line graph within a sentence available to you on your site are really endless.
Very cool.
There I go rambling again.
Now, one thing you didn't say about the ASP.NET MVP Hacks book is that you're one of the authors, right?
I did imply that. You're right. There are a number of smarter authors than I on the book. If you look at the cover of the book up at shrinkster.com/EJ4, I was joking earlier that it looks like a bunch of guys with some 12-sided dice that are about ready to play some D&D. bunch of nerdy looking guys on our Brady Bunch cover there. But, you know, we've got Jonathan Goodyear, you know, the angry coder there.
Right.
Jay Ambrose. I mean, these are some smart guys. Joe Mayo, who did a C-sharp book recently for the same author as the PowerShell in Action. So David Yak has really got a bunch of smart folks together. And I guess they're doing a deal up on Amazon now that you can buy that book along with the ASP.NET book for the price of one. So it's kind of a twofer deal up on Amazon right now.
It's a good book. I've read it.
The Professional ASP.NET 201?
No, your ASP.NET MVP hacks book.
You were one of the reviewers?
Yeah.
Oh, rock on.
Yep.
I didn't know that. You were sneaking around in the back looking at the proofs, brother.
See, you don't even know.
See, and if I had known you were reading, I would have left messages for you in the comments. A couple other things. I'm going to be running around next week, speaking at a couple of places as part of my INETA obligations. At shrinkster.com/EJ7, I'll be in Pittsburgh on Tuesday, North Dallas on Wednesday, and Dallas on Thursday, all the while holding down my full-time job, logging in over the cell phone modem there, trying to get real work done.
Yeah.
And that speaker schedule, like I said, is up there at shrinkster.com/EJ7. And then at TechEd, I'm going to be part of the group of judges for the Iron Architect contest.
Nice.
And the Iron Architect contest up at shrinkster.com/EJ8 is pretty interesting because if you, even though the site's a little dense with its amount of information, if you look into the details, they're giving away a free chance at the Microsoft Architect certification.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the super certification, right? This isn't like MCSE or MCSD.
This is like the $10,000 one.
They're giving away something worth 10 grand. Basically, you sit in front of a board and go through a whole process. This is a multi-month, you know, 6 month, 9 month process you have to go through. It's like
right.
getting your MS,
right?
Getting your master's and something like that. And they've got the Iron Architect question up there, and they're going to be judged by a bunch of competent MVPs, and you could potentially win something worth 10 grand.
Hey, and as long as we're talking about appearances, I'm doing something that I don't think anyone has done before. I'm making a remote appearance at a Code Camp or a Grok Talk, they're calling it. It's not really a Code Camp. It's the Ann Arbor Grok Talk. And it's today, Wednesday. It's the day that this show is coming out. I'll be doing it tonight. And we're basically setting up a computer. I'm remoting in. I've got a telephone interface. And I'm doing a demo from my office in New London to a crowd at this group. And if it works, you know, maybe we'll try to enable this technology for other people who want to do remote presentations.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen that before. It's such an obvious thing to do, but I've never seen anyone give a talk. Are they going to put you on the screen with a camera?
No, you won't see me on the screen, but you'll see my machine.
And you're gonna share your entire screen out to the entire.
Share my entire screen, and we have two-way communication between the crowd and me.
That's
via
hot,
the phone.
Man. That's hot.
Yep.
I could have tried that. That would get me off of an airplane.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole idea. Is that, you know, we're going to talk to INETA about this, and maybe, you know, making some formal process by which we can get the equipment out to the user groups and get them some training.
What a great idea.
Yep. It's the same stuff that we use for DNR TV and .NET Rocks, telephone interface kind of stuff with some microphones and some audio wizardry on their end.
Very slick.
And also, Richard and I are doing a .NET Rocks live at TechEd in Boston. And we're going to be interviewing the IE7 team, although they haven't committed yet, but they have a initial, gee, that sounds cool. And we're going to be raffling off at that show a MSDN premium subscription. MSDN premium subscription. We're going to be giving one of those away. Now, as you know, this is something that Microsoft just doesn't give away very often. But we as regional directors and MVPs, too, as well, get to give a few of these away to key customers. And I decided to use one of mine at this TechEd session.
Very cool.
All right, Scott. And that brings us to the end of another fabulous episode of Hansel Minutes. Thanks for listening. Scott, thanks for sharing. And we'll see you next week on Hansel Minutes.